You know that whole the Vireo that we say like, huh, I build this, it's up running, bye, and that's it. So that's where most of us as tech people, we tend to make mistakes. So making sure that we're actually monitoring and actively having participation during the whole software development lifecycle is something essential. Because in the end, when things go wrong, and they will go wrong, is inevitable, right? We have to be prepared to actually act fast and get the people that are meaningful for this investigation to be around.
Welcome to the Better Incidents Podcast, where we hear from reliability-obsessed responders who are at the forefront of the movement to better manage, remediate, and learn from incidents. I'm your host, Robert Ross. So Hoshi, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today on the Better Incidents Podcast.
Well, my pleasure. Like, it's good to talk to you. And like, yeah, we already talked before, but it's really nice talking to you, Robert.
Yeah, thank you. So we're going to do something. We're going to do a little icebreaker. And as we did some of our like spying on you before today, you had something you mentioned about being a karate instructor. And would love to hear a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a funny one. So yeah, I actually always practice martial arts, but for a long time I stopped and I just resumed that when I was in my 30s because I wanted to do something with my kid. And my kid stopped and I kept doing it. So long story short, it's been 17 years doing that. Wow. Yeah, but between a life as a software architect and a cloud architect, I teach. I teach karate for kids, teens, adults, seniors. It's really nice. Yeah.
Do you have like a studio you do that in, or do you just bring people into that your living room? I don't know how this works. So
yeah, no, it's my plan. Like, I'm planning to open a dojo. We call it the dojo. But for now, I teach for my sensei. And this, in his dojo, it's nice. At least I don't have to worry about all the bills and the rents and everything else.
Right. Yeah. And dojo. I knew that, and I called it a studio, and I feel very silly now. That's great. And tell us a little bit about where you work right now, what you do, and a little bit of your background as a software professional.
Sure. I hope I don't get you bored. So I'm a cloud architect at the Qlik today. My background was always regarding technology. I was a geek since very early. My first time coding was 13. I used to code in DBase, in Clipper. Mm-hmm. It was prehistory probably. But now... Officially, I started in IT and as customer support and an ISP. So my life started dealing with customers very early. So things like phone support, managing services, updating like phone lines, because you know we used to have BBS back in the days. But over that, I was being between web development and support and infrastructure over the last 30 years. Oh my God, it's speaking out loud. This is scary. Yes.
30 years is a long time. Yeah.
It is.
And where were you doing that in the world?
That's good. I'm half Japanese. I'm half Brazilian. I was born in Brazil. I grew up in Brazil. So for about 30 years, I was in Brazil working there. So, between that time, I worked from some local companies. My last experience in Brazil was actually in a HSBC bank. I was part of the global technology team of HSBC. And that's what actually made my life easier to move to Canada. And I got transferred here. I immigrated to Canada, became a Canadian citizen. And yeah, after between HSBC and Qlik, I had a couple of years working for Ubisoft, so moved entirely away from the financial business to gaming, and now I'm in data analytics. Yeah,
that kind of explains some of the figurines behind you now, actually, the Ubisoft experience. So, You know, that's just yet another thing I've learned on this podcast about you. That's great. And what great background, and you've been doing it for so long. You've seen advancements in software for so many years now. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about today is software systems. They're becoming more and more complex. You've seen them for the last 30 years probably get more and more complex. Not that they were never not, but it's something that we're kind of curious about is what strategies, what tools are you seeing become kind of crucial for keeping those complex systems online for incident management? Because reliability is something that everyone's trying to maintain right now, keep it to a really high level. Software has become more of a utility than anything. So what are some of the tools, strategies you're seeing nowadays for that?
Yes. So it's interesting because the more this whole thing started when we start exploring more the cloud. And I think the speed and facility that we can develop applications using cloud today makes everybody like very excited with possibilities and the simplicity and say, wow, it's so fast to develop something. But then most of the time when we end up developing a solution for the cloud, we forget the very basic thing, which is making sure this is working and working fine. So you know that whole Devario that we say like, ha, I build this, it's up running, bye, and that's it. So that's where most of us as tech people, we tend to make mistakes. So making sure that we're actually monitoring and actively having participation during the whole software development lifecycle is something essential. We need to be able to measure what we're doing, how we're doing, and over a long period of time. So having a good observability over the whole process, not only after you deliver it, but having, for example, like Dora metrics when you get it deployed, or actually having SLOs for your services, service level indicators for when they're deployed, and having them all tied to SLAs, it makes it more streamlined. But then it gets the other part, right? It's important. It's good that you're able to monitor all that. You got all this data that you're able to analyze it. But if you don't get like a good process integrating all of that and actually making people act quickly and getting all the information quickly, it becomes chaos. So you have to be able to have a place where you can consolidate all this information, because in the end, when things go wrong, and they will go wrong, is inevitable, right? We have to be prepared to actually act fast and get the people that are meaningful for this investigation to be around. So yes, I think observability is one. It's a very important one. Having being able to analyze this, a good alerting system, and especially a way that you can get people together to investigate as fast as possible, and getting means for getting all the information they need.
Yeah. And I love how you started the question. It was kind of the catalyst might have been the cloud for these hyper complex systems. You know, with great power comes great responsibility. And that's definitely what I've seen in my experience as well. And you were talking about, you brought up Dora metrics as one of the first things you mentioned. Can you just really briefly explain like what Dora metrics are?
Sure. And maybe I'm not the best person to talk about this, but my understanding and my interpretation from Dora metrics are actually indicators that let you understand how you're doing over your delivery process. So how long it takes for you to get the service from the moment that you commit, you release something to the moment that it can actually get to production. And you can actually
lead time to change.
Lead time to change, yeah.
Yeah, and they have a bunch of other nice metrics that are well-defined now, too, for reliability was recently introduced in there. And I think change failure rate is one of my personal favorites.
Yes, that's an exciting one.
It's a good way to implement a strategy for how do we measure how safe are our releases, because more often than not, a release is what causes an outage for sure. When you're thinking about the teams, you mentioned like how do we get the right people in there? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think in the past we've had Knox as the people that are typically first in line to receive an incident and maybe respond to that. But you said something that like perked my ears up around getting the right people. What does that mean?
Oh, yes. So to me, like software development, it's about ownership. So it's not about creating something and forgetting, but being able to be on top over, well, it's like a child. You're responsible for that. Mm-hmm. And for example, we know, like we all want to have our lives. We want to stop and sleep, do have a normal life, step away from the computer. But we also should be able to have some sort of a way of monitoring and stepping into investigating what's going on with your services or with your platform when you need to. So for example, developers are very important, like essential part of any software development. Like you can get a service without a developer, but you also have other members in the company. You may have like a pipeline engineering team. You may have a quality team. You may have, you definitely must have like a customer support team, sales, and et cetera, et cetera. And depending on what's going on, you want to have this escalated in different ways. Like, let's say you were a developer, you have a service, you have an application, you have a product that showing indicators that something may not be 100%. You want to be the first one to be notified. You don't want the CEO of the company figuring out, right? So you're going to right away jump in and take a look at what's going on and see like, oh no, that's something simple. We can fix this later. We're just going to release or fix this. But if it's something more critical and you notice like, oh, there might be customers involved, you want to get the customer support working with you. You want to have the pipeline engineering helping you, supporting you. And if it actually becomes something bigger, of course, you want your superiors, you want your manager, your director to also be involved because they also don't want to be the last one figure out what's going on, right?
Right. Yeah. And depending on your alerting setup, they could be in the escalation, but at the very end, kind of looming in some cases, and it becomes a little bit more of a stick than a carrot. But
yep.
I love how you said customer support in there too, because they have a stake in this as well. How have you done that in the past? Like, what's the best way to kind of loop in the support people during an incident?
I'm not going to mention names because, of course, I want to save my bank account with lawyers and stuff. But
sure,
but it used to be bad. Like in the past, I think it's a learning process. We were talking about like 10, 20 years ago. We used to be much more reactive. We used to have like the customer reaching out to us and they used to be the first one bringing the problems. And when you realize it, you already have a certain level of stress when you get to the developer or the sysadmin, and it was like, oh, that's a bad moment. So despite our efforts to start putting like monitors on those times, the integration between all the teams seems to be something that was not very streamlined. So over the years, we started learning with that. I think we are in a much better moment today where we can actually have tools that let us talk together than we were like 15, 20 years ago. So
yeah,
it's much better that we learned that before customer support today.
Yeah. And how did it look 10, 15 years ago? I mean, you've worked at the eighth largest bank in the world. You worked at an extremely well-known, you know, gaming company, and now you're at another, you know, very large publicly traded company. What has been the biggest difference from 10 years ago to today?
I think the one big game changer to me was the introduction of the concept of the SRE, I believe, because SRE actually kicked off the discussion about DevOps. And then everybody started asking about, oh, what it means to be DevOps and et cetera, et cetera. So we have a mindset today that it's not about just looking at our belly buttons. We understand that the environment, the ecosystem that we're involved today, it's much bigger. And it's good that we have this mentality, this mindset being spread across companies. It's a slow process. We know that not every company adopts that, but you can see that today, it's the understanding of the ownership, and I'm sorry that I keep coming about that, but I think I love the word.
That's fine. That's one of my favorite topics. So.
Yeah. I think the concept of ownership it's actually being more spread, and this understanding that we are not alone, we are not just behind a keyboard doing something in Bai. It's what's making this big change for us.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that we're seeing teams building things together more than in the past. I think that that makes a lot of sense. Like, you can even kind of feel it in the applications we use day to day. They're starting to feel more congruent feature to feature than in some other applications we use. So I won't name names, but we use a payroll provider that you can tell that it's an older piece of software that was built by different people over many different years, as compared to a company like Airbnb, where it's like, that's a big application, but it feels the same every corner you go to.
That's true. It's funny because every here and there's a new vendor that reaches out, or we're evaluating a different tool. And the first thing we notice, like, okay, let's take a look at the status page of those guys. And we look at like, yeah, so look at this. Okay, yeah, that already tells you a lot something about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So how have some of these advancements, so like if we have these teams that own their outcomes, right? They own their, let's call it a neighborhood of software in the grand scheme of a city. What has changed for them and how they respond to reliability and outages and just overall incidents since then too?
I think there's a learning there's a learning process for each team. I'm not naive to think that you may have all the teams in the company going on board at the same time, embracing this concept of owning everything. But for those that actually start understanding that and taking advantage of this process, I think it's beneficial, because I mentioned the example of the CEO learning something before review. Like, this is actually the second worst scenario that you can have. The first one is actually the customer reaching out to the CEO and let you know. So that's going to be pretty bad.
I've been the engineer that's been told by the CEO that a customer told them, and it was not my favorite day.
That's probably the most painful part of the day, yeah. But for those teams that actually start doing that in early stages, that they can actually combine all the KPIs that they have during the development, all the monitors that they have, with the solution that can let them know what's going on beforehand. Those teams are getting like a really good, they're probably like almost in a really good level in the learning curve of being good owners of their services. They say like, I don't have a label for that, but they're probably like close to heroes, that you may call it, because it's almost about getting what you see in the SRE books, that those people are actually on top over the whole development, and they can learn things that may in another situation be critical for the whole business continuity for your company, and they can act faster and act fast and avoid like what we call like big bangs or nukes that may mm-hmm. come and take you down. So, and those teams, and they're good. Yeah.
And what allows them to act faster, right? Like what changed that allowed a service owner to react to outages faster than in the past?
Yeah, having good alerts is essential. Like, in making sure that you have indicators of service health in place, and those alerts are actually just reach out to you at the right moment, because mm-hmm. there's one side effect of alerts that nobody talks too much, which is the noise. Yeah, it's like noise is something that nobody wants.
What is noise to you? I have my version.
Noise is when you get an alert that is supposed to be important, but it became so frugal, so trivial and annoying that you don't even pay attention to that anymore. So it's like, it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. The noisy alerts and they cause a bigger pain at some point, because eventually you're going to get an alert that is real.
Yep. Yep. But I'm curious, what's your definition for alerts?
My definition is, I think, very similar. I think a noisy alert is something that is being sent to me that doesn't need to be sent to me, because the challenge with alerting is that they kind of have the same amplification level despite the severity. Your phone is going to ring the same time, like the same kind of ringtone for each type of alert you have. So you kind of have to curate which alerts you want to subscribe to and really be cognizant per team of that when this alert comes in and matches this criteria, we're going to actually wake somebody up because we know that this is real enough that we should, be willing to wake up an engineer. Otherwise, discard it or push it somewhere else, right? Maybe wait until tomorrow for that alert to actually go out.
I have a definition for alerts. Like, it's not a definition, but I think it's just a perception that you want them to, when you receive an alert, you want to feel like Batman. Because like, oh, someone is calling. The commissioner is actually calling me. And not like, oh, that's you're just an operator saying like, oh, okay, bye.
Yeah. I like that. Like, it should be, if you're calling me, like, it should be a big deal. So trying to get us back on, as much as I would love to talk about Batman and which movie director did the best version.
Batman's the guy, man. Like,
let's talk a little bit about, we're already a little bit on the topic of alerting here, but let's talk about tool consolidation. Right now, the space around incidents is getting, it's had a lot of advancements. From different types of tools. We've seen chaos engineering, we've seen SLO tools, we've seen incident response tools, and obviously fire hydrant kind of is in there. But there's also the alerting category existed for a while too. Why do you think that the alerting tools who have been around for a while have kind of shied away from building better incident management functionality?
Yeah, good question. Just taking a hook at what you mentioned about tools, one thing that you definitely want to have, and I think I'm being repetitive about this, but it's good when you have a good integration, like being able to have something that can gives you the seamless transparency about what you're dealing with and everything that you have. It helps a lot. So you don't have to keep jumping between 5 or 6 different systems just to figure out what's going on. And when you have a solution that can actually integrate all the information that we have, or at least like the most relevant information that you need, it makes a huge difference because it lets you take decisions that otherwise might take like valuable time from when you're investigating something. And being able to have this integration in a solution, and of course, I'm going to say we are using FireHydrant, and we're happy with the fact that we use you guys because you're giving us this facility to get this agility for dealing with incidents today. Like the fact that we rely a lot on RAM books and communications and also all the cross communication that happens, it helps us a lot. And I believe we still have like a huge potential of what else we can integrate in FireHunt today.
We integrate with multiple alerting tools today. Most of our customers integrate, 95% of our customers integrate a tool, with PagerDuty being the largest. And we've kind of seen that it makes more sense to us to, why not do it ourselves, right? And because you're saying that you want to have less places to go to. You don't want to have 15 tabs open to manage an incident, right? Should be one tab is the ideal, I think, at some point. But what does the alerting tool like do for you folks? Like, how is it configured? How do you use it? Are you integrating it with multiple sources and then kicking off incident response for every single alert? Or how does that integration really come into reality for you?
Yeah, so today our alerting solution, it it's integrated based on our monitoring system. So it's not integrated. It's connected to. So we just use it as a way to notify on callers, being them SREs or developers or whoever is involved. So this notification, we automated everything. So everything is based on Terraform. So any new service that comes in place, we have it automatically added to the alerting pipeline. We can have teams onboarded. So it's we build our way to make this work. I have to tell that we did a good job making this work so far, but we lack some functionalities, like things that we want to have optimized. And sometimes this either will mean we're going to have to invest a good time developing it, or we have to rethink the way we work.
So I think a good way to kind of round out this conversation and thinking about, we're talking about alerting, we're talking about incident response. It is the Better Incidents podcast. And one thing that I hear a lot is about alert fatigue. And we talked about noisy alerts, but I think a result of that, it can be fatigue. What are some of the consequences of alert fatigue that you've seen in your career, you've seen others experience, like, and how can it really impact these service owners?
Yes. So I think motivation is probably the biggest blow, like when you get on someone, because independent how you have your team set up, if you have first alerts going to support or going to an SRE team or if they go to developers, nobody wants to be notified just because something is failing and that's actually a false alarm. So you want to look at, and again, going back to Batman, you want to be the Batman guy. You want to receive something and notice that this is actually important or not. Like, you don't want to have your system down. But yeah, you want to take a look. You want to be able to act only for something that is actually real. Mm-hmm. And if you have this fatigue building over teams for too long, you're going to start losing trust in your system. You're going to lose trust in your ability to maintain that. And you're even going to start asking if we're actually going to the right direction. Sometimes this is good. Like, it's a good sign. You actually have to evaluate. But if you're actually just experiencing that because you're not being able to rely on good practice, on the right practices to monitor this, then that's going to be pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you just said, like, it can actually be a little bit of a good thing. I think that fatigue, if you're starting to experience fatigue, it's like a smell of like something's broken, like we need to address something. And so when you talk about addressing it, how do you reduce alert fatigue beyond the obvious answer of like have less alerts, like going a step beyond that?
Yeah. How we address this? There are several ways. Like, one, it will depend, of course, on what you're experiencing. If you're just getting alert because you have a misconfiguration alert, you have a misconfigured alert, you have to sit and reevaluate what you're doing and like making sure that you're actually getting the right information. And like, just go ahead and like, oh, I can do it right. Other solutions, you may have to create like escalation processes. Maybe you have the wrong escalation process in place. You're being the person receiving everything on yourself, and you should actually start figuring out, oh, wait, then let's split the responsibilities for this. We actually have should start dealing with tier one, tier two, tier, and so on. But yeah, there are different ways. I think I'll take that case by case, but those two cases that I mentioned to you are probably two that are most common in companies.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everyone is kind of looking at reducing alert noise and fatigue in general, because that's usually a result of more reliable software too.
Definitely. Yeah.
But I also, I think that some teams could have reliable software and be over alerting. And it can maybe give the sense of our software isn't reliable, but are you measuring the right things as one of the issues for it?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's great. I love how you have threaded like ownership through the entire conversation, right? Like when people own things and they are able to build trust in the things that they own. And I think that's how we think as well, is that when teams own the services they build and the alerts they receive for those systems, they're going to just be happier over time.
True.
I think that's a major takeaway for me.
Yeah, I'll say, and I have to make one thing clear. Like when I say the concept of ownership can be really tricky sometimes, because it doesn't mean that you have to be 100% like awakened and not doing anything else for your life. You actually have to find this good balance between having trusting what you're developing, and also the relationship that you have with the other members of the company. It's a two ways. It's a path of two directions. You have to be responsible for something, but you have to have trust and with other teams and other members that are also collaborating with you. So it's not, ownership doesn't mean slavery. I think that's the concept that I have. Yeah.
I think it's a fair point. Sometimes you want to own your services, but you have to strike a healthy balance between work and personal, for sure. Which you seem to do quite a bit with going to, I now know, a dojo instead of a studio. Well, hey, this has been a great little conversation we've had here. So again, thanks so much for coming on and giving us all of the 30 years of experience.
Don't say that out loud. I'm feeling old. Don't say that.
I don't have quite as many as that, for sure. But, you know, I'll get there eventually.
Yeah. I'm actually gonna strike that from my resume. I'm feeling super old now. Like, oh my god. Yeah.
You're gonna have to just remove your experience at that point. People can do the math.
Good point. I'm gonna say that I start working when NSYNC was, no, NSYNC is old. Oh my god. Yeah, never mind.
NSYNC is old now too, actually.
It's true.
All right. Well, before this gets a little too off the rails, thanks again, and you know, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much, Robert, and thank you for all the wonderful episodes of this podcast. Thank you.
The Better Incidents podcast is lovingly nurtured by the team at FireHydrant and made possible with generous contributions from the Better Incidents Collective. Learn more at betterincidents.com.